Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Joe is hurt. Angie Dundee, Ali's trainer right next to me, is saying it. You may hear him. Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
That's Howard Cosell's famous response to the first of half a dozen knockouts then heavyweight champion Joe Frazier suffered at the hands of George Foreman when they fought in 1973. Joe Frazier had remembered for beating Muhammad Ali once and losing to him twice in their memorably brutal fights, died on Monday. Howard Cosell, who died in 1995, is the subject of a new biography by Mark Hrabowski. At one point during his career as a loquacious broadcaster of sports and a ferocious promoter of self, Cosell was voted both the most loved and the most hated fellow on TV. It was a dual distinction that fascinated Hrabowski, and when I had the opportunity to speak with him this week, I began our conversation by asking him how the inimitable Mr. Cosell got his start in broadcasting.
Well, he came up at a time when that kind of approach was completely verboten. It had never been seen before. It was in the 50s when sportscasters were basically the lapdogs of the teams, the leagues, the commissioners, the sponsors on the networks. Weren't there to make any waves. They were there basically to say how great these leagues were and how great the owners were and how great everything was. I don't really know how he ever made it, to tell you the truth, because he wasn't only fighting those stereotypes. He was fighting, as he pointed out many times, the inbred structure of anti-Semitism in the industry then in the 50s. Yeah, there were very few Jews on the air and fewer who sounded Jewish the way Cosell did. He laid the groundwork in the 50s by climbing the company ladder at ABC. He was very fortunate that ABC took note of him because ABC was the only network that could have possibly allowed for the ascendance of a Howard Cosell.
You give us an image of Howard Cosell's earliest days broadcasting, and he's laboring, carrying this enormous piece of recording equipment on his back. Yeah. Have I got that right?
Yeah, 40-pound tape recorder, which no one ever used before. You had to plug it in wherever you went. And he used to lug this on his back. He must look like Quasimodo lugging this thing around from locker room to locker room. And, of course, the resistance he faced because of that was immense. Just the fact that he was from TV. TV very rarely covered baseball, football, they covered the games, but they didn't really cover it as news events. They didn't have, there was no CNN, there was no ESPN back then. But Cosell, working locally for a kiddie show, it was called All League Clubhouse, and he just worked his way up, and the sports writers hated him. They used to knock the plug out of that tape recorder when he was in the clubhouse. They used to utter profanities into his microphone so that the tape would be unusable. He faced resistance right from the start, but he just kept moving up.
You write that even before most people knew who he was, Howard Cosell was, quote, an arrogance addict who seemed to have a knee-jerk reflex for cruelty. How and when did that become apparent?
That was always there. It was there when he was a law student at NYU. He used to walk around with his nose up in the air. And, this was the way he was. He was a very imperious man. He always believed in himself, but it was driven by 1,001 insecurities, which date back to his childhood. But he was so driven, and he believed in his method so intensely that the force of his personality could not be stopped.
Muhammad Ali is a central figure in your book because the long-running act for which Muhammad Ali and Howard Cosell partnered was to a great extent responsible for Cosell's notoriety. But tell us a little bit about how the broadcaster recognized an opportunity when he first encountered Ali, actually first as Cassius Clay.
Well, Cosell had made his way up along the boxing meridian. He had actually become quite close to Floyd Patterson when Patterson was the champ. They were so close that Patterson practically was a family member of the Cosell clan. He was at the house a lot. Cosell's wife and two daughters loved him. He used to send them presents from Europe when he would go, defend his title. And Patterson lost to Liston just as Cassius Clay was on the way up. Clay turned into this great self-promoter, and Cosell really saw in that a chance to affiliate himself with this incredible force, this nuclear force. And, you know, that was February 25th, 1964, when Clay fought Liston in Miami Beach. That was the birth of the of two, maybe the two prime cultural icons of the 60s, Clay and Cosell, because Cosell was at ringside, and, you know, the famous line, now, "I'm going up into the ring," you know, after Clay won the fight. And, you know, they never sat down and drew up a marketing plan, but I think it was in both of their heads the mutually beneficial relationship they could have. Once Clay beat Liston, I think that, you know, they both saw the sky was the limit.
You characterize Howard Cosell as, quote, "a speaker of truth, unafraid to offend those who might take offense." And you've talked a little bit about how his style was different from those who came before him. But what particular achievements as a reporter or as an interviewer led you to that conclusion?
When he stood up for Ali, on constitutional grounds, it wasn't based on opposition to Vietnam. It wasn't based on his color. Even his religion, it was based solely on constitutional grounds. It was a very fine line that Cosell had to draw, because after all, he's working for a big corporation. You know, the sponsors are very conservative people, and yet here he is, maybe the only journalist, certainly the only television journalist, to take Ali's side at a time when maybe, 90-95% of America just considered Ali a traitor, you know, who should be in jail, and a commie in this whole thing. And later on, he did some really good, really fine journalistic work, especially when he had his show called Sports Beat toward the end of his career. He was a very, very good journalist. I mean, he wasn't always right, but he always took a stand. And for that, I really gave him tons of credit.
Howard Cosell was certainly a major force on Monday Night Football, which drew an enormous audience. And for years, he was a presence at virtually every major sports event and appeared as a guest on all sorts of sitcoms as well, playing himself for the most part. But how do you make the leap from that sort of achievement to, and I'm quoting you now, "he was himself a social institution"?
Because there was no bigger cultural icon in the 70s. He used to joke about it, not even joking. He would say there was this holy trinity of TV icons in the 70s, Johnny Carson, Walter Cronkite, and himself. And I think he was right, because everywhere you turned in the 70s, as you just said, there was Cosell. He far transcended sports. And when he would go on these sitcoms like The Odd Couple and, you know, the Dean Martin roasts and all that, all he was doing was playing himself. You know, he never had to play another role in his life. That's how strong that caricature was, that self-caricature. He was probably even more recognizable. You know, the famous TV Guide poll that had him the most beloved and the most detested TV personality at the same time? It takes a real talent to do that, doesn't it? People would say they hate Cosell, but when is he on next? You know, and it takes a unique to the extreme talent to be able to pull that off.
You write that when Cosell's broadcasting career ended, and I'm quoting here, "around ABC Sports, there was nothing but relief that he was gone." Was there no pride at the network at what the company and Cosell had created?
Oh, there was plenty of pride. It was just they couldn't stand working with him, because he would always look for confrontations, and he would always pick fights with people, and he would always hold grudges against people. And if you work with him for any period of time, if you were his friend, you became his enemy. Howard needed an enemy, as it was described to me by several of the people I interviewed. He needed to have someone to hate on. And I mean, that might have been okay, at the beginning. It made for some interesting television. But toward the end, he had nobody to fall back on. Nobody that was rooting for him. So when he took a hard fall after, you know, leaving Monday Night Football and then leaving the network, it was sort of a stoning. People were piling on him, and he just, you know, He had asked for that. It was sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's why the end years of his life were so sad and pathetic. It was almost beyond belief that a man who had ascended that high could fall so far and so fast.
You write about how at the end of his life he would go into restaurants just hoping somebody would recognize him.
Oh, boy. He would eat alone because he couldn't find anyone to eat dinner with him. And then at the end of his life, his daughters wouldn't let him be seen in public because he was that pathetic. He had deteriorated that much. Howard was of the opinion that because people would gather around him on the street and taxi cab drivers would yell out to him, you know, tell it like it is, Howie, he conned himself into believing he was a beloved man. But in fact, he was not.
Howard Cosell died in April of 1995. With the perspective of a decade and a half, describe his legacy for us.
His legacy is that we didn't know him. We didn't know his insecurities. We didn't know what drove him, because there's always something that drives a genius like that. I mean, that's a word that's used rather loosely, of course. But for what he did, he was certainly a genius. He was ahead of his time, and the fact is he took his time with him. When he died, he took his times with him, because nobody could follow that.
Mark Hrabowski is the author of Howard Cosell, The Man, the Myth, and the Transformation of American Sports. The book is published by Norton, and the author joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. Mark, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill. It was terrific.
My conversation with Mark Hrabowski, the author of Howard Cosell, The Man, the Myth, and the Transformation of American Sports, will be featured on this week's program. We'll also be following the developments at Penn State, late the employer of Joe Paterno, who was fired on Wednesday. Paterno's exceptional career ended when the university's trustees decided that the best way to begin putting distance between themselves and the alleged crimes of Paterno's former assistant, Jerry Sandusky, was to change head football coaches and presidents. Doug Trabue will visit once more with a man who set out to sink a million free throws on behalf of U.S. veterans. I hope that sound I just heard wasn't number 999,999 clanking off the rim. Karen Given will discover a whole new meaning to the term mind games, and she'll go to Harvard to do it. And we'll have an appreciation of the aforementioned former heavyweight champ, Joe Frazier. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.